Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Experiential Table Podcast. I'm Cynthia Simonian, your host, founder of Hidden Rhythm, and creator of Cooking Class Business School. I help culinary pros create and market profitable online cooking classes, memberships, and more. Now, I'm willing to bet that you're listening today because you're either thinking about building your own online cooking class business, or you already have one that you want to take to the next level. Well, if you're in either camp, then I want you to know that you are absolutely in the right place. Grab a pen and paper because this golden episode is going to be filled with so much valuable info. Really, press pause, go grab your favorite pen, your favorite notebook, and get ready to get inspired. On today's show, I am thrilled to have Caroline Chambers here with us. She's a professional recipe developer, cookbook author, and the head chef of an online cooking school. Caroline is a master of creating beautiful yet simple meals with as few ingredients and dirty dishes as possible. She has a solid grasp of her ideal student and knows how to give them exactly what they want. So much so that in less than a year, she's created a six-figure business teaching online. I can't wait to hear exactly how Caroline did this. And I'm sure you want to know too. We have so much to talk about. So let's dive right in. Hi, Caroline. Welcome to the show.
Hi, I'm so excited to be here today. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. If you couldn't tell in my intro, I am beyond excited to talk to you. Before we do that, though, I do want to give our listeners a little sneak peek into your background. Now, Caroline is a professional recipe developer and the author of Just Married, a cookbook for newlyweds, which features 130 recipes to celebrate a new marriage. She's also the author of the non-cookbook, What to Cook When You Don't Feel Like Cooking, a newsletter that has exploded in popularity thanks to its quick, simple, and ridiculously delicious once-a-week recipes. And lastly, Caroline is the head chef at Kitchen Table, her online cooking school. All right, Caroline, you are busy. I think that you also might be the first professional recipe developer we've had on the show. So we got to start there. How did you end up in the role of being a recipe developer? Had you been in food for a while before then?
Yes. Wow, we kind of got to go way back to get there. But I graduated from UNC Chapel Hill. And around my junior year, I was like cooking all the time. My roommates and I were having these huge dinner parties back, you know, when we were just in college and nobody was having dinner parties. We were just, you know, meeting up at bars at 10 p.m. at night, oh, the days. And I loved cooking, but I didn't know that there could be a career in it for me other than the restaurant life. I knew that restaurant life was not for me. And I thought, you know, I'm getting this traditional degree. How could that ever translate to food? So I pursued a traditional career in advertising, worked in advertising for several years. And my husband, George, was in the military. So we wound up moving to San Diego together because he was based there. And when we moved and I had to leave New York, I looked at him. I remember on our drive across the country, and I was like, all I want to do is work in food, but I don't know how to do it. And he was like, well, this is a perfect opportunity. You don't know a soul in San Diego. You don't know anyone in advertising. Just don't work in advertising anymore. And I was like, what? I could just change careers? So we get to San Diego. He's like, figure it out. Take a couple months and figure out how to work in food. And I sort of staged at a few different restaurants. Staging is interning in a restaurant, if you are not familiar. And staged in a few restaurants, was like, okay, for sure, that's not for me. And I wound up starting my own catering company with very little formal training. And I just knew that kind of being able to set my own schedule and create these like boutique food experiences was what I wanted to do. I really resonate with what you were doing with the Experiential Table, because I wanted to not just bring people the food, but bring them a full experience. So I started catering. I had a really successful, great little catering business in Coronado, California for several years. And during those 2 years, people from local magazines and then local brands and then bigger brands started asking me to develop recipes for them. And, you know, you fake it till you make it. So the first big brand that called me was Woodbridge by Robert Mondavi. And they were like, hi, we found you on Instagram and we love your work. I was just posting pretty, you know, catering pictures. We love your work. Do you develop recipes for brands? And I, of course, said, of course I do all the time. And I, uh, I wound up doing a really big job for them, and I developed their yearly marketing recipes. So they use them, you know, to pitch their new wine for spring. They pair it with a beautiful brunch recipe, and I'm the person who develops that recipe. And that's the kind of work that I have done since then, since about 2015. I transitioned fully out of the catering world when George and I left San Diego and went full-time. Well, as so many of us in this freelance world have, I've had many different jobs in that in the meantime, but I have, my steady thing has been freelance recipe development for about the past 7 years.
I have to ask you something, because you basically just quickly brush over the fact that you left a career in advertising to start a catering company with no formal culinary training. Is that right? Did I hear that correctly?
It's funny. I don't even end up talking about the fact that I had so little, I mean, when I say little formal training, I had no formal training. What am I saying? Little. I had no formal training. And so my husband was a Navy SEAL, and thus his schedule was incredibly unpredictable. And the one thing that I knew from having other SEAL wife friends or spouse friends, and he had just gotten home from a deployment, from an almost year-long deployment to Afghanistan. The one thing that I knew in my young marriage was that when he was home, I wanted to be able to spend time with him. And having staged in a few restaurants and having worked in advertising, which was insane hours, I knew that neither of those would afford me the opportunity to hang out with my husband. We didn't even have kids at this time. I just wanted to be able to have like a nice work-life balance. That's always been really important to me. And so catering, I didn't even know recipe development was a thing. I knew I didn't want to be a food blogger. That just, being a food blogger never struck a chord with me for whatever reason. So I knew it wasn't that. I knew I wanted to be doing, you know, experiences with other human beings, like not just sitting on my computer alone. And catering was what ended up happening, because I could set my own schedule. I could look at George's deployment schedule. I could look at his training schedule, and I could operate around that. And I started a catering business with absolutely no training. And I wound up, I mean, I was catering by the end of my stint with the company was Cucina Coronado, Coronado Kitchen. By the end of, I think it was open for exactly two years. By the end, I was catering 500 person weddings and, you know, huge conferences and just huge events. And I was the only full-time employee.
Wow.
Ever. I had freelance. I used other SEAL wives mostly as my cater waiters and as my sous chefs. I mean, it was, when I think back, it was a pretty crazy thing, but you know, you get a big job, you get a big offer, and you find the way to meet the demand.
Has that been something that's consistent? Like when you look back and you think about things that you've done, are you the type of person to just figure it out on your own and not feel like you have to have your T's crossed and your I's dotted? Is that a personality trait of yours?
That is 100% a personality trait of mine. That does not mean that it doesn't come with a lot of like little panic attacks. Like I did, even just this past week, I took over the, you know, Whole30, the elimination diet. I took over their Instagram for a full week. So it was a lot of content, but it was a huge opportunity because they have 1.5 million followers. And I'm like I love doing the Whole30 at least once a year, yada, yada. And the Sunday night before it, I looked at my husband, George, and was like, I'm not ready. I have a 6-month-old at home. I have Callum. How am I going to do it? I need a babysitter. Can you stay home from work all week? And he looked at me and was like, just remember when you catered that 300 person wedding and, you know, you didn't start doing it until 2 days before and you didn't have all the staff hired and you pulled it off. And the person whose wedding I catered is still like one of my biggest fans. She's an Instagram follower and she takes a lot of my online cooking classes, and she still tells me that it was like the best food ever, and everyone always tells her. So, you know, you don't just do the best you can. You like make it the best thing possible. And it doesn't matter if you don't know exactly how to do everything and to pull it off, you just make it work. And nobody can see behind the scenes what an absolute gong show it is.
Right. Yeah. And I can really relate to that. I've had those moments too. And it's great to have a partner, a family member, someone who can remind you that you've felt this way before and you've been able to overcome it. So like you do have it, you can make it happen. And actually some advice that I give my students at Cooking Class Business School is to launch before you're ready. Because if you wait until it's perfect, it's never going to happen, because things come up. And especially if you're a perfectionist, you will certainly come up with 10 excuses why your website's not perfect, why, you know, you don't have the menu finalized, when the truth is, if you just say yes, you're forcing yourself to actually make it happen.
I love that. And I've been teaching like a little mini, and I've been pushing everyone your way, but the platform that I teach my classes on is called AirSubs. And I taught a little like teach-in because I was one of their original cooking instructors. They have fitness instructors and meditation instructors, all kinds, but I was one of the original cooking instructors and have built a business around it. And so I taught for several people who are trying to launch their own cooking class businesses. I taught a little seminar the other day, and that is one of my main things. Like just go. This has never existed before. Like Cynthia has never taught cooking classes before, so nobody should have any expectation on how it runs. Like nobody's ever been to this wedding and had this food, so nobody has an expectation for what it looks like. I used to have like all these, they weren't buffets, they were like little mini stations, and they were like nothing that any other caterer was doing, not because they were so original, but because it was what I could pull off with such minimal unformally trained staff. People loved it because it was new and it was different and it was cool. And that's the same thing with these cooking classes. Like just go. Nobody knows what to expect. Nobody's ever taken a class with you.
Exactly.
And you set the pace for what it is.
Yeah. Okay. So let's dive into that, because there's so much I want to ask you about. And I certainly want to talk about your membership and that what'd you call it? Like an uncookbook or a non-email?
I call it my non-cookbook for people who are too busy to be.
Yes. So we've got to get to that. But first off, so one thing I want to know is you said that you never really wanted to get into food blogging. Once you left the catering world, you continued down the path of recipe development, right? And you worked, I think, for some companies in that role formally of doing professional recipe development. So did you have anything on the side that was to start building your personal brand, whether it was Instagram, or did you decide to start a blog or anything like that?
You know, one of my big, and you know, regret, what's the point of regret? But one of my big regrets is that while I was working in professional recipe development, so I worked at an actual restaurant consulting firm in San Francisco called The Culinary Edge, and they do recipe development for big brands like Starbucks and Panera and, you know, larger brands that need their menus developed for the coming season, for the coming years. I worked there and I always had a side hustle. I was always doing recipe development on the side. And then I left, I wrote a cookbook. And during that time, I was also side hustling, continuing to do freelance recipe development. And I just never placed as high of a premium on social and on my own brand as I wish I had. My website, carolinechambers.com, until March, like 17th, 2020, it was just a portfolio. So you went, and it was for brands who wanted to hire me. I'd say, yeah, go to carolinechambers.com, check it out. And it was just beautiful images with here's a thing I did for Eating Well. Here's a thing that I did for the New York Times. It was just a portfolio. And if I ever posted a recipe, it was on my Instagram. And I had a little like carolinechambers.com/blog. I had a tiny little blog section that if I was really ambitious, I would get a recipe up there. But I never had a centralized theme of what I was offering people as simply Caroline Chambers. My recipes, when a brand, you know, hires me, for instance, Kim Crawford has been a client of mine on and off. And when they hire me, my name doesn't go anywhere on that recipe, right? So they use it for marketing in a grocery store. They use it for marketing in the back of an advertorial in a magazine, and it doesn't say recipe by Caroline Chambers. It's just, this is a recipe that pairs well with Kim Crawford wine. And I wish that I had sort of made more of a stand for myself and shown what I was doing more and just started building my personal brand. Cause I had, when, you know, March this time last year happened, I sort of had to pivot, and I, all of a sudden my advertising clients and my freelance recipe development clients dried up, and because they had no idea how to market in this new pandemic world. They had no idea what to do. So they just, all the jobs ended. I was in the middle of a job for Corona beer, believe it or not.
Really? Corona out of all the clients?
I'm not kidding. Like my career has completely pivoted and done a 180, or not a 180, it's, you know, but it's really changed in the past year. And it began with a job for Corona Beer going, I can't write that.
That's just that.
It was unreal. I remember I was on set shooting it down at a photography studio down in Monterey. We were shooting the recipes and we were like, gosh, I wonder what's going to happen. And then the next day, Monterey went on lockdown. So anyway, I've worked in on and off in recipe development forever. I wish that I had made Caroline Chambers more of a brand, more of a, you know, this is who I am from the start. And I even had kind of a snobby attitude about it. Like, oh, I don't need to be a food blogger. I make my money by, you know, selling my recipes this way. I don't need to have my own presence. And I don't know why I was that way. I always was on Instagram. I just wasn't, there was zero consistency to it.
Right. Yeah. And I think part of it was just out of necessity. Like, you didn't need to do it. Your back wasn't up against the wall. So you were being paid to do what you're doing professionally. And I could see how you would look at Instagram or looking at having a website and running a blog and being like, I'll spend time with my husband and kids, right?
Yes, totally. That's exactly it. And when you're, you know, when the money's good, you don't think, okay, I need to be building for the future for a possible pivot down the road. You just think, oh, I'm going to keep doing this forever. And I had kind of reached a point, pandemic or no pandemic, I had definitely reached a point where I wanted to be able to just start publishing the recipes that I wanted when I wanted. And the money was so good from recipe development that I didn't have time to pivot and focus on just publishing recipes from Caroline Chambers for free. Like, no, I don't have time to do anything for free. I've got too much stuff going on that I'm making money on. And then all of a sudden, pandemic hit, no jobs. And I went, okay, this is it. I'm going to pivot. And I just started cranking content on my own.
So yeah, let's talk about that, because everyone knows the day for you, it was March 17th, right? Okay. And today it's actually March 18th, 2021. So here we are exactly a year later. And as your advertising clients stopped calling or started to cancel shoots that you had, what were you thinking? What was the first thing that you did to, like you said, pivot your business? Or maybe it wasn't a full 180, but you had to pivot it a bit. So what did that look like?
I know, it's funny. I keep saying pivot and I'm like, well, I'm still in food, but it really, it's new, new tentacles grew. I don't know.
Yeah.
Like I said, probably around the time Mattis, my 2-year-old, was born, that was right when my cookbook, Just Married, was published. They were, you know, born within a month of each other, I think. And I knew in my mind, I knew that I wanted to sort of start making myself the brand and like making, you know, sort of building a personal brand out of Caroline Chambers and being able to publish my own recipes, you know, the recipes that I wanted when I wanted. But I just didn't have the time. I had a new baby and I had a busy roster of clients, but it was something that I talked about for Mattis. So Mattis was a year old when the pandemic started. So it was something I'd been talking about actively for, let's say, 18 months. And I'd get really ambitious one month and I'd like say, hey, every Tuesday, I'm going to post a recipe, a 10 ingredient recipe. And I'd do it for a month and then I would still have a 1-year-old and, you know, life would happen and I'd get a new client and that would take the back burner because it was unpaid. So it was just zero consistency in social media leads to nothing. You've got to be consistent. You've got to show people what you're offering. So last March, when all of my other work went away, I was like, okay, consistency, here I come, unpaid or not, here it is. And I just started cranking content. I completely revamped. I stayed up for like a week straight. I was also pregnant with my now 6-month-old. I stayed up for like a week straight, just completely revamping my website. It still is terrible. Don't get me wrong, because I did it and I'm a recipe developer, not a web developer. But I completely revamped my website to make all of the content that I'd created over these 6-7 years of being a professional recipe developer. I had hundreds of recipes spewing across the internet that my clients didn't mind if I posted, like, sure, just give us credit, link back to our site. That's good for them, right? So I got all of those recipes up onto CarolineChambers.com in a somewhat searchable, organized, cataloged format. That was what I spent about 2 weeks on. And in the daytime, so that was what I did by night when the toddler was asleep. And in the daytime, I was filming videos of, here's how I get lunch on the table for my family during the pandemic. I had like an IGTV series. It's so funny to even think about. I had an IGTV series called like Quarantine Kitchen, that I was, you know, here's what's in my pantry. Let's cook it. Like, you know, I've got peanut butter, soy sauce. Let's make peanut noodles. And I started just gaining followers really quickly because I was showing up every single day. My stories, my Instagram stories were always full. I had an IGTV going up every other day or whatever. I was posting pictures every day. I just started showing up on social media. And I tell you what, that's what, if you ever take like a how to win an Instagram seminar, it's like consistency. And you're like, okay, but how?
Yeah.
Just show up. It doesn't matter how you show up. Mine was, oh my gosh, when I look back at those videos, I like look like a hot mess. I'm first trimester pregnant, I'm like staying up all night doing my website. I look terrible, but I'm showing up and giving great recipes and showing up as myself. And I started getting a lot more followers. So
when you decided to just go all in, I mean, you were like, I'm going to revamp the website. I'm going to show up on Instagram every minute. What was the goal for you? Like, what were you like? And then this will happen. Like, what was that in your mind back then?
That's a great question because that has even changed. So at that point, I'm thinking, I'm going to be an Instagram person who gets paid by brands to post.
Just like, say it. Just say influencer. You know you want to say it.
I say internet person.
It's not a dirty word on this show, but a lot of people are uncomfortable saying it.
Say internet person. So yeah, at that point I was basically like, okay, influencer. I was thinking I'm going to build up my Instagram, be an influencer, and I'll make my income by, I'm drinking a Kite drink right now. So by Kite paying me to develop cocktail recipes, I always want for the brands that I work with to integrate really seamlessly with the content I'm already creating. And I say no to a lot of things because it's like a product I would never use or I would never want my people to use. But that was what I was thinking.
Okay. Yeah, which is totally realistic. And given your experience writing recipes, I mean, I feel like a brand's would be like begging to work with someone like you because you actually know what you're doing on the recipe development side and you have the advertising background. I mean, it's like a total power combo there that you have.
Yeah. So that was what I was thinking.
And then that changed. Tell me what happened that then led you down the path of teaching online cooking classes.
So let's say mid-April rolls around and I've been cranking content. I've been going on doing Instagram lives with brands and because I have these brand relationships. But at this point, I probably have 3,000 Instagram followers. Maybe by mid-April, I had 4,000 Instagram followers. And I'm emailing everyone. Can I do a live with you? Can I do a takeover for you? You know, trying to grow my audience thinking I'm going to be an influencer. That's how I'm going to make my income. Mid-April rolls around. I love No Kid Hungry, the organization that helps feed hungry kids in America. And they posted a statistic that the rate of hungry children in the US was rising from one in every, I might botch this, but I think it was one in every six kids.
Yes.
To it was creeping in on one in every five kids. I believe we're now it's creeping in on one in every four kids. But I saw that and I thought, gosh, what if I taught an online cooking class? And this, I don't know if you remember, but last April, it wasn't really happening yet. People hadn't pivoted there. If you were an in-person instructor, I hadn't seen anybody really pivot to online. Of course, there was kind of the master class and there were a few online cooking classy things happening, but not a lot of live interactive classes.
I think you're right. Yeah. I mean, people were waiting, right? I think back in mid-March, we still were like, oh, maybe this will pass by mid-April. So I think there was some hesitancy to learn a whole new platform.
Totally. People were just in hibernation. We were paused. So I saw that statistic and for whatever reason, it struck a chord and I thought, okay, I'll do a Zoom cooking class. Okay, sure. And so like most decisions that I've made in my life, I called George and said, does this sound like a good idea? And he was like, I have literally no idea what you're talking about. Sure. Sounds good. If you think you could raise some money, great. I can watch Mattis while you do it. So I posted it on Instagram. Hey, would anybody do this? And I did one of those polls. And I think I had truly 4,000 Instagram followers at the time. And like 2,000 people said yes. It was the most interaction I've like ever gotten. I was like, you're out there? I didn't even know you guys were there. So I posted the poll. Everybody said yes. Posted, got it up, you know, signed up for a Zoom account that could last longer than 45 minutes, set a date, and I set it up just through my website. So on carolinechambers.com, you would go on and you'd like buy a ticket for this event. And then I would see your email pop up. It'd be like cynthia@experientialtablebook.com. And then I would individually email each person who enrolled, email them the recipe. You're like, can't make this up. So I post it and I'm so nervous, Cynthia, because I'm like, no one's going to show up. It's going to be me and my mom and my sister and, you know, and one other random person, and that poor other random person's going to be so awkward. And it sold out. And at that point I had the Zoom package that was 100 people. And I thought that that was the most you could have, by the way. So I taught several classes thinking that that was the highest they could go, and keep being like, sorry, it sold out. And meanwhile, I could have been raising more money. But anyway, I sold it out, 100 people. And I was wow.
And how much were they paying for the donation?
So it was donation. So it was whatever you wanted to pay. So some people paid 500, some people paid $5.
Wow.
And that was fine. And that was great. And I did them like that every single Wednesday for about 3 months, I think. And I donated mostly to No Kid Hungry. We did a few for Feeding America. We did a few for, I think, the Loveland Foundation, which is a foundation that supports therapy for Black women and girls. We did, the Navy SEAL Foundation, which supports Gold Star families. It was Memorial Day, I think. Anyway, I did these charity events every single Wednesday for months, and they sold out every single time. And I was like, what? Wow. And my husband, being ever the capitalist, and I'm starting to think this too, but my husband, ever the capitalist, is like, honey, I think there's something to this. I think there's a business here. And I, ever the, you know, sensitive creative, I'm like, no. People are just doing it for No Kid Hungry. They don't want to do it. You know, it's not a business. They won't pay if it's not for charity. And, you know, you miss 100% of the shots you don't take. So I launched one week I said, hey, and this week I'm also doing a class on Monday, and it's, you know, I don't know if I said it, it's not for charity, it's just for me. But it wasn't for charity. And I was so nervous about it, because again, I felt nobody's going to come if it's not for charity. They're just doing it for charity. And sure enough, people showed up to that one too. So I started teaching one-offs, and maybe now we're until May or June. I started just teaching one-off classes, you know, one a week, two a week, however many a week. And I started, then I pivoted, because at this point I'm extremely pregnant with my second child. So I started just teaching one charity class a month, and just really started building this online cooking class business. It's so funny. When I was writing my bio, just even for you last week, I was like, how do I talk about myself?
It's probably changed so many times.
Am I the head chef? Am I the founder? Is it a cooking school? Is it a cooking class? Like, what even is it? But I call it Kitchen Table. I have now, I'm really skipping ahead, but I pivoted it into a subscription, and I call it Kitchen Table. And it's my online, I don't know, I guess it's a cooking school. It's my online cooking school.
I want to talk about a few things before we skip to the membership, because that is definitely where you have grown the business in such impressive ways. We will definitely get to it, but I want to know this. So once you started the individual cooking classes that weren't for charity. They were for you to earn a living. How did you go about promoting the classes? Did you focus just on social media? Did you have an email list that you were building? I'd love to know how you thought about your community and getting them amped up for all the classes that you were teaching, since they weren't tied to a charity. And also at the same time, competition is starting to show up, right?
So the shortest answer is I still only market my classes through Instagram and my email list. But yes, at this time, so at the time that I fully revamped my website and start really showing up on social media, another thing that I really focused on, and I am not kidding when I say I had no idea why I was doing it. I was doing it because everything on the internet that was like, how to grow your personal brand, was like, build your email list. And I didn't know why I was building my email list, but I started building my email list. And here's what I would do before, you know, on Instagram, you get the swipe up function at 10,000 followers, which is so annoying for a small business, but that's a whole other conversation. Before I had the swipe up, my newsletter went out every Sunday morning, and I would, or maybe it was Monday morning back then, I would put one of those question boxes on Instagram, and I would say, hey, here's what my newsletter, with my face, always the most effective way to get people to sign up for my classes or sign up for my newsletter, anything, is always when I'm talking to the camera. So not a pretty picture. They want, it's about, you know, the personal connection of, okay, this is the person that the email is going to be coming from. That's what I've found. So with me talking to the camera, hey, here's what my newsletter is about this week. It's spring. Asparagus is in season. I have 5 amazing recipes with asparagus. One of them I developed for this grill company 2 years ago. It focuses on char. One of them I developed for a vinegar company 3 years ago. It focuses on using a really great sauce. The other two I developed just for you guys, and they're exclusive for my email list. Make sure you sign up. Whatever. Really niche example there, but it's asparagus season, so there we are. So I would put one of those question boxes in the Instagram box, and I would say, if you want to sign up, because I knew, Cynthia, I knew if I said, head to the link in my bio and then click on the link and then go to my website and then sign up for my newsletter, I knew I would lose so many people from my marketing days. I just knew that the drop-off would be so huge. And just from being a human being who does that myself, I knew the drop-off would be so huge. So I said, you know, leave your email right here. And I would get hundreds of signups every week. And I would have to manually put every single one of those into my newsletter list. But who cares?
That's a great problem to have.
Yeah. Stay up an extra hour and get it done.
I love that. That is such a great tip, because you're right. You're trying to reduce the friction there. And if you're sending people to a link and then the link doesn't load on their phone and it's not optimized for mobile, you've lost them. But there's nothing easier than just having someone just type their email in a box. That's so smart.
So fast and easy. And I would, again, just sensitive, creative soul, every week that I posted that, I'd be like, nobody's going to want to sign up. Why would anybody sign up for another newsletter? And I'd get hundreds of signups every single week. So believe in yourself, believe in the product you have, you know, just something people want.
Yeah. So it's been about a year maybe since you started your email list. So would you say that, like, back then you had no idea why you were building it, but would you say now that it has been a valuable asset for you?
As soon as I pivoted to online cooking classes that were for me, I was building this business. I was building what was then the beginnings of Kitchen Table. I had this, oh, this is why I've been building an email list. Like, all the, you know, you take these online, how do I build my brand? And they say, build your email list so that you can sell your products directly. Email has a much better conversion rate to sales than Instagram. So you can sell your product. And I would always be like, well, I don't have a product. I'm trying to be an influencer. I don't have a product to sell. And I did. It was right around the corner. And in fact, I was probably even already teaching my charity classes, and I just didn't even realize, oh, this is a product. And then now, and we'll talk about it later, but now I also have a newsletter, a paid newsletter that is also that's why I was building my newsletter list this whole time.
So should people listening who don't have an email list, who teach online cooking classes or want to start an email list, Caroline?
Build that email list. It converts so much higher from versus Instagram versus Facebook, whatever, getting an email in your inbox when all you have to do, I'm like holding up my phone and acting it out as if this is a video. All you have to do is click a button and enroll in the class and enroll in the newsletter, whatever it is. I cannot preach the gospel of having your own email list enough. I genuinely had no idea why I was building a newsletter list. And now it is, when I launched my paid newsletter, I had 5,000 email addresses to launch it to. And I converted like 50% of those to paid. And, you know, without that, I had nothing.
Right. And how often are you emailing people on your free newsletter?
Oh, great question. So back then, until I launched my paid newsletter, which I launched in December, I had one newsletter a week. It was a weekly newsletter that was sometimes it was an exclusive recipe. If I really was doing a big push to try to get a lot of new subscribers, I would post some really sexy picture of like a penne alla vodka with some sort of cool hack. And I would make it exclusive for my newsletter subscribers. Every week that I did the exclusive recipe drop, I got so many more signups than if it was just, you know, a compilation of recipes that were already on my blog. I got so many more signups that was what eventually led to the idea for What to Cook When You Don't Feel Like Cooking, my paid newsletter, which is every single week an exclusive recipe. Because I thought, gosh, there's something to, you know, you can only get it here. It's only coming on my newsletter. And anyway, What to Cook is also, it's a complete meal. So people really stress out about, you know, how am I going to get dinner on the table for my family? I have to find a side dish. I have to find a main dish. And What to Cook When You Don't Feel Like Cooking gives you the entire meal and it takes under an hour. But anyway, yes,
we're going to talk about that right now. We're going to talk about it. Let's talk about this newsletter because I had read that it's the top three food newsletter on Substack, which is a newsletter platform, and it's paid, right? So people are paying to hear from you in their inbox, which is incredible. Uh-huh. So if people don't understand how Substack works, maybe you can explain it better because I'm not on it. I've read your newsletter, but like what made you decide to start selling this newsletter and use, say, Substack or a platform like that?
So I was having these little moments of realization when I would do the exclusive recipes. Like I said, I would get so many more signups. And What to Cook When You Don't Feel Like Cooking was actually the title of a cookbook that I tried to pitch in 2019. Yes. After Mattis, my 2-year-old, was born, I had just published Just Married, and it is recipes for two that are for newlyweds. And so it doesn't really focus on timeliness as much. There's a lot of really quick and easy recipes in there, but it's not the main focus. And you know, fast forward 3 years, I have my first child. I realize this is no longer how I'm cooking. What I want is a one skillet meal, a one pot meal, a sheet pan meal, a recipe where the side dish only takes 3 minutes if the entree takes a really long time. And I want somebody to tell me the entire meal at once. I don't want to go to the entrees chapter and then flip to the sides chapter and have to pick a side that matches. One of the DMs that I was starting to get a lot from Just Married fans was, hey, what pairs really well with your harissa short ribs? Or what pairs really well with those Brussels sprouts? I love the Brussels sprouts, but what entree would be good with it? And I realized people who don't cook a lot genuinely can't even figure out how to pair things together. Yeah. So newsletter gives you the whole thing. This week is like a crispy pork chop with creamed corn and kale. And it's the whole thing. The pork chop and the kale gets cooked in the same skillet. The corn has this like really cool blender hack to make creamed corn with no cream. I just knew that this idea for, you know, meals that take under an hour, minimal ingredients, I knew it had to get into the world. I pitched it as a cookbook and, oh, this will get you. So this is really what helped me decide, okay, I have to start being my own brand. Every single editor that my agent and I pitched it to, every single one was like, I love this concept. It's so good for, you know, millennials who aren't really cooking as much. They don't know how to cook. These recipes are really easy. It's so good. But Caroline just doesn't have as much enough social reach. That was the exact quote. Caroline doesn't have enough social reach. And so in the just 2 years since Just Married had published, I had already had a cookbook deal. I'd published a really successful, beautiful cookbook. And in the 2 years since it published, the world had changed so much that now food bloggers, influencers are the people getting cookbook deals, not professional recipe developers. So I didn't have enough of my own people who I could sell that book to make it, you know, a sure enough bet for publishers, because that's kind of, they want you to have your own built-in audience of people who are going to buy your cookbook before you get a cookbook deal. I've got 150 recipes just waiting for me to develop them. So the idea was fully baked. I started to see people, you know, sort of the paid newsletter concept popping up. I started to hear more about Substack, and I just decided to go for it. And I launched to that email list. And I launched just before the holidays on purpose so that it would be kind of, so drive a lot of, you know, gift sales. And I think I sold like 1,200 subscriptions in 2 days or something.
Wow. And how much is the subscription?
$35, the price of a cookbook, as a real FU to the publishing industry.
I was going to say, you're probably going to make more from this, if you haven't yet already, than a cookbook, because I think that's something that people don't know who are outside of the industry, is that cookbooks aren't always profitable for the author.
I'm pretty open about just finances and earnings. I think it's important to empower other people who are trying to build their own companies and brands.
Yes.
I think if you just ignore finances, you can't leave out that big equation. We've all been told, don't talk about money, but you can't not talk about money and build a successful business. So I mentioned on my Instagram about a month ago, maybe 2 months ago at this point, that I had hit the point where I had now made more money than with my first cookbook on my newsletter.
So I'm doing the math. 35 times 1200. Is that what we're doing here?
That's what we're doing here. Yeah.
That's $42,000. That is real money. I mean, I know everyone listening here can agree with me when, like, that is no small fee. And what's so awesome about it, Caroline, is that it's all yours and it's your content. You get to control it. And this audience is only going to want more from you. So you are building this passionate, loyal base. And the fact that they're paying you and not brands or advertisers, I think is just really powerful, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm now at well over 2,000. And the coolest thing is it's only going to continue to grow. You keep pushing out amazing content, and the more money I make from it, the more focus I can put on it, right? I can say no to, I'm not even, by the way, I'm doing no recipe development gigs anymore. I don't even have time for them between my classes and my newsletter. So yeah, to your point of nobody else is paying you for that except for yourself, that's the most exciting part of this for me. A year ago, I hoping and, you know, working my butt off trying to get brand partnerships. And now my entire income is solely based on two products that I have and I own. And if I want to teach another class, an extra cooking class, I can, and make some extra, you know, money that month. With a brand partnership, you're sitting and you're waiting for the income to come to you. You know, yes, you can keep emailing them and you can keep trying, but ultimately it's their decision. And I feel very empowered to have these two income streams that are entirely based on my work and the amount of effort that I put into them.
Yes. This is incredible. So we have to talk about the other income stream of the two, which is, of course, your cooking class membership.
Yes.
So
you really started, got it back.
Yeah, we got it. I mean, that's definitely like the meat of this conversation as well. So you made the switch from individual classes taught by you, not for charity, but for you, and then switched it to a membership. What triggered that change? And was it that your students were asking for more? What made you decide to switch to a membership model?
So last summer, I'm doing probably at that point, at least one public class per week. They're just picking up in popularity. I am also growing, by the way, my Instagram following a lot through these classes. So at the end of every class, I'll say, hey, tag me in pictures. You know, the best way I grow is through word of mouth. And right now there is no word of mouth because the world is closed. So please, you know, tag me in a picture if you loved class. So after every class, I would see like 100, 200 person spike because everybody who came to class would tag me in a picture and it would bump up. So yeah, I'm starting to teach more and more classes. I'm also starting to get more and more pregnant. I had Callum in September. So all summer long, I'm cranking classes. That's really my main focus. That's how I'm making my full income at this point. By that point, I had already stopped doing any recipe development for other brands. I have Callum. I probably, like you, am like, okay, make yourself take 2 months off. And then I see that the platform that I teach my classes on, which is called AirSubs, I mentioned it earlier, I see that they are launching subscriptions. Actually, one of the founders, Tomas, texts me and is like, I only want you to be on maternity leave, but I also would feel bad if, you know, you weren't included in knowing this. We're launching subscriptions. So now you don't just teach a one-off class. You can have subscribers to your classes. And I'm like, let me put the baby down. I'm going to call you. This is when I have like a 3-week-old. So I put the baby down. I call Tomas and he's like, okay, so this is the deal. People want to be at your classes, you know, at every single one of your classes. If you offer them more value, you can just set it and forget it, have a recurring revenue stream and not have to be constantly marketing your classes. So at that point, I'm on Instagram, I am constantly talking about my classes. And I just figured if I lose followers because they don't like what I'm selling, fine. They're not buying what I'm selling, so they're not important to me. Or if it annoys them, they, you know, they don't want to, they're not supporting my work anyway, so that's okay, unfollow me. So I was constantly talking about my classes, and that's how I was getting, you know, that and my email list are how I was getting people to come. He had pulled some data for me and he was like, look, Emma came to every single one of your classes that you had in the summer, every single one. I was like, okay. He's like, Lexi came to every single one except for one. You know, Cynthia came to all but two. So he's showing me all this data. And he's like, if you could provide them some value, just set it on a subscription. And then you don't have to constantly market your classes. You set it and forget it. And you show up for class and all your people are just there without you having to constantly promote and constantly promote. And I was like, again, the theme of this podcast should be creative self-doubt. Because again, I was like, There's no way somebody will want to pay me, you know, $35 a month just to come to my classes. Like, that's a significant, that's an investment. And, you know, nobody would want to do that. And so he really took me through this data, showed me, yes, they do. They want to be there. So that sort of forced me out of my maternity leave a little early because I was so excited to get it going. I knew my cooking classes had been this great income source for about 6 months at this point, but I didn't know where it was going. And I, you know, do I keep doing them after maternity leave? Do I start doing something else? What do I do? And this subscription just felt like it. And so I launched October 16th or something like that. And I launched, dun, 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 guess who I launched to? My email list. So I launched at a lower price just to my email list. And I send my newsletter at 5 a.m. Pacific time. So it is the first thing to get into your inbox. on the East Coast or on the West Coast. So I launched it. I woke up that morning and I had said the first 100 people to subscribe are going to be locked in at this price. And I woke up to 180 founding members.
What?
At low price. Oh. And I was like, what? And I'm sure you've had this moment. I'm scrolling through my email and I'm like, when's it going to end? When's it going to end? When's it going to end? And I had 180 founding members to start with. So I...
Did you cry? Because I probably would have cried.
You know, I didn't cry. I had actually had this like sort of panicky moment. I remember George wakes up at 5 a.m. So I was going to say rolled over and looked at George, but no, I found George wherever he was. And I was like, 180 people subscribed. I probably had forgotten to even tell him that I was launching that night. He's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, 180 people. What am I going to do? The most I've ever had in a class is 100. What if I have 180 people in each class? You know, I'm freaking out. I'm like, can I still have random people come or is this it? He's like, and this is where he gives me my pep talk. He's like, Caroline, you've done this before. You know, remember when you catered that 300 person wedding, when you had no idea how to cater a 300 person wedding? Take a deep breath, slow down. And so I sat with those 180 for a couple days, calmed down, and then was like, you know what? It's a Zoom room. I can have as many people as I want in that room. And I can still make it an awesome, intimate experience. I just am going to have to change maybe the way that I operate a few things. Maybe for really huge classes that tons of people sign up for, I need to get a moderator. Maybe sometimes I cap them at 50 if it's a, you know, pasta making class and I want to make sure that everyone's on the same page the whole time. That's okay. I can do those things. And so then on Wednesday, I launched on a Monday, and on Wednesday I launched via Instagram at my, what's going to be my base price, which is $34.99 a month for 4 classes. And I think I got 100 in a week. So that was a slower, because if you're on my email list, you're like, you know, you're my person. You like,
yeah,
to be a part of this. So it was crazy how much faster those people were like, yep, no brainer. Yeah. I want in. And then, so it took me about a week to get 100 subscribers via Instagram. And
which is still pretty impressive.
Which is still really awesome and great. And so those have continued to grow. My attrition rate is actually really low. I, again, with the creative self-doubt, I just kept thinking, oh, they're going to do it for a month and they're going to drop off. And I have not. I've had like 7 people, I think, drop off the entire time. So
that's amazing, because subscriptions are hard. They're, you know, even Netflix can have a hard time keeping people on board, and they have everything. So you mentioned something about your people, and that leads me to a question I have about who your person is, right? So who is your ideal student? Who are the people who you know love what you have? They're the ones signing up. Like, how in tune are you with your niche? Because that to me is really, really important, but it doesn't sound like you intentionally set out to define a niche. Maybe I missed that.
You know, I didn't intentionally, but I think the person that I'm talking to on Instagram, the person that I'm talking to in my classes, the person I'm talking to with What to Cook is somebody who really values a home cooked meal, but doesn't feel equipped to do it on their own. It stresses them out to write a grocery list. I write grocery lists for all of my classes, by the way. And my people really love that. That's kind of a side note, but grocery lists, and not just the recipes, but I write a grocery list with like, here, you know, this is the produce section. This is the dairy. And anyway, that's so my people like don't have time to write a grocery list. They're either busy young working people, or they have 5 kids running around the house, and maybe they also have a career on top of that. But they really value eating a meal with their families. So most of my students, there's a few single folks who just love cooking and love getting to hang out with everybody, but it's mostly people who are either just married or have a family and want to place more of a value on sitting down and having a meal together. The recipes that I teach a lot of skills in them. Last night we did a 2-for-1 sheet pan meal. So we cooked dinner for last night and we also cooked dinner for tonight. So we like marinated the chicken, got everything ready. And all they have to do tonight is pop it in the fridge. And in that class, which was two basic, you know, pretty simple meals, we did a ton of knife skills talk. So how to hold your knife properly, how to slice an onion properly, how to dice an onion, how to mince garlic the easiest way. There's a lot of skills within my classes that will make you an ultimately much better cook. But the baseline is you're getting a meal onto the table with your family that otherwise you might not have.
Right. Okay. And I'm going to maybe embarrass you a bit. I don't think it's embarrassing, but I think a lot of your success has to do with your personality, your sense of humor, and your approach. So, I mean, I've just watched some of the videos that you've put up on Facebook, and I've actually shared some with my students in cooking class business school, because you did one in particular. It was a Trader Joe's haul. And the way you just went through and talked about each of the things, it was just like you were a friend having real talk with your best friend. Like, you just are able to be approachable. And I think my opinion is that that is perhaps a larger part of your success than the fact that you teach sheet pan dinners.
Yeah.
I'm going to say that, and I'm going to let you brag about yourself if you agree.
Thank you. Yes, I definitely think a big part of, and I mean, so there, I'm trying to create approachable meals and recipes. And I think a part of that is that I liken myself to be a very approachable human and person. And how do I brag?
Like, for example, on your Instagram, there are photos of your kids. You talk about them, right? You don't like act like, you know, you have this like perfect, you know, picture perfect life. Like, you'll talk about like your kid crying, or, you know, even when we've had calls, like, it's like, oh, 1 second, I have to like take care of my son. It's like, yeah, I hear you. I'm a new mom, right? So there's this like realness to you that I think sometimes culinary instructors or people who are transitioning in the teaching space emphasize what they're teaching more than actually the fact that it's about them and how they connect and relate to their students, right? That's part of the experience more than even like the specific recipe that you're teaching.
Yeah, I totally hear you. I mean, I will say I have a few over 300 members right now. And I can say I have a personal relationship with I think every single one of them. I have a private Facebook group, and in between classes, we all post pictures and we talk about our lives. I have a close friends group on Instagram that you can share more than you share just to your normal group, that I get on there and just like let a rip about whatever I'm thinking about or new products I'm finding or whatever it is. And yeah, I mean, it's so much more than... You're right. It is so much more than just the food. It's about personal connection and having fun. And I mean, I think a good example is if you watch like a Cook's Illustrated cooking video versus a Bon Appetit Kitchen, you know, RIP.
Sorry, like, Cook's Illustrated.
I know. I love Cook's Illustrated so much. And if I need the straightforward facts, that's where I'm going. But if I want to watch something fun and entertaining, I'm watching like a circa 2019, 2018 Bon Appetit. They're having fun. They're talking to the cameraman. They're talking to everybody else in the kitchen. And that is, you know, I'm giving away my my secret ingredient for the last question you're going to ask me, but that's kind of what it's all about. It's all about having fun, making this human connection. You know, we can't take ourselves too seriously. It's just food. I had a client, like I am doing some brand partnership stuff now as just funny money, which is great.
Because you're so bored, right?
I'm so bored. I'm like, why not add one more thing? So I'm doing some brand partnership stuff now, and I screwed something up last week. So I like, what did I do? I put the wrong, you know, freaking hashtag or something so silly. And I started to freak out. I was on the way to the pediatrician with Callum, and I was like, oh God, I screwed up. They're never going to want to work with me again. And I had no service. I live kind of in the mountains in Carmel Valley, California. I had no service, so I couldn't fix it. Couldn't even pull over and fix it. Was late to the pediatrician. Couldn't pull over and fix. Couldn't go home. And I pulled over this mountain. The view was beautiful, and I just like took a deep breath, and I was like, "It's food, Caroline. It's food. Nothing about this. I'm not a brain surgeon. Everything that I do is to provide just, you know, joy and happiness and literally to feed people in the easiest way possible. And, you know, nothing about our job needs to be too serious." So just having fun with it.
Yeah. Yeah. And I get that. I get that a lot when I look at the videos that you do, and it's just a preview for your classes, right? It's like, if you are having fun in your Facebook lives, then people can expect to have that same sort of energy in the classes. And at some point, I mean, it's kind of entertainment too, right? It's not just learning to cook, but it's like, why not have fun doing it, especially right now? So I'm actually, you already answered what you think the most important element is of an incredible experience. I do have another question though, and this is a deep one, so you can take some time. But I want to know from you, what do you think the future is of online cooking classes? As you know, more people are getting vaccinated, people can't wait to get into the physical world. What does your crystal ball say?
This is a great one. I don't think they're going anywhere. That's the TLDR, is I don't think they are going anywhere. And I also, the reason that I wanted to come on this podcast is I also, you mentioned, you know, around the summertime, the competition was kind of starting to heat up. I also genuinely do not think that there will ever be, you know, so much competition in this space that you can't have your own successful school. People are coming to your cooking classes because they, I mean, to your earlier point, because they want to learn how to cook from you. Yes.
Are you pounding on a table right now? I can hear how emphatic you are about what you're saying.
Because they want to learn from you. Yes. I was doing some serious finger wrapping there. The space is picking up. To me, the competition is not. And I every new cooking instructor that joins Air Subs, the platform I teach on, I've told the founders, let them sit in on some of my classes, let them watch my on-demand classes, whatever they need to do to help them build their business. Cause I'm really passionate about helping people in this space. It's a lot of women I'm noticing. I'm really passionate about helping women and men build their businesses and build their personal brands. I think there's enough space for all of us. How I think it might change as the world, fingers crossed, gets back to normal is I'm noticing maybe my classes aren't as full, but when I do a really highly specialized class, they are filling up more. So I did a homemade pasta class. Totally filled it up. Last night's sheet pan class only had like 60 people in it, which is pretty low for my attendance numbers. So we might need to, you know, pivot what we're teaching and the value that we're giving and make sure that it's something that they really can't just do on their own, or make sure that it's so much fun. Because that was my answer to the question, to your original question, make sure that the experience is so much fun that they want to be there instead of out at a restaurant. So bring your spouse, bring your girlfriend, bring your mom, have a night in and cook with me instead of going out. And it's just as much fun. And man, is it more affordable.
I mean, that is certainly for true. And thanks for bringing that up. I mean, the fun element is important. And I think this last year, when we made this sudden shift to teaching online and taking online cooking classes, it was new, right? We're like, oh my gosh, we're on Zoom. And there was this novelty of, you know, I remember the first call that my husband's family, they're all over the world, they're scattered. And we did our first family Zoom call and it was like, oh, look, like there's so-and-so. And oh my gosh, they dialed in from France. And that got old really quickly. And I think what we're seeing is that online cooking classes, like everything, have to evolve. And what worked in 2020 only can get us so far. And now there's an evolution that is ahead. And like you said, making the classes more entertaining, thinking a little bit more deeply about what you're teaching and focusing on a specialty could be a great way to ensure that you still have enrollments at a level where it makes sense for your business.
Yeah. Yeah. I look at companies like Obey Fitness or Peloton or Masterclass is a great example in the cooking world. And I look at the investment that they're putting in and the talent that they're getting for, you know, to do these filmed, not live classes. And they clearly think that there's a future to online learning. And I think that if there's a future to learning online by a static video that you get no interaction with, you don't see any other people with, it's just you watching basically a YouTube video. If there's a future of that, there is absolutely a future of these live engaging experiences that, I mean, we genuinely have so much fun in our classes. Like we make fun of Lexi because she always cooks everything before class because she's so type A, and we, you know,
Lexi.
And like Sarah's always 10 steps behind and we make fun of her, and it's genuinely, we just have this like fun group experience. And I mean, when I have people drop off, like I said, I think I've only lost about 7 members, but they DM me or email me and are like, I'm so sorry, we're moving houses and we have to cut expenses. You know, it's like, I guess my unsolicited advice for building your subscription is, don't just build a subscription that's, you know, one person subscribing to you. Make it a community. Build a private Facebook group with your group and have everyone share their pictures, or do an Instagram close friends group with everybody. Make it somehow. I mean, I joke with my close friends from college and high school. I talk to my kitchen table members way more than I talk to them, like 10 times as much as I talk to them. I talk to, you know, the 5 names that I've mentioned today. I talk to them like all day long on Instagram. So build a community and have fun with it. Do whatever feels right and authentic to you. To me, it feels right and authentic to have this private Facebook group where I share ideas and recipes and we all chat with each other, and I DM with people all day long because that feels good for what I'm doing right now. So find a way to really connect with your people and have a ton of fun doing it.
That's such good advice. I think the perfect way to close out this interview. Thank you so much, Caroline, for being on the show today. If our listeners want to learn more about you, your cooking school, your cookbooks, all the things that you are working on, where is the best place for them to find all that info?
I think go follow me on Instagram at Caro Chambers, C-A-R-O Chambers. And I link to everything there. So if you go to the link in bio there, you can find my cooking classes. We didn't even talk about my private cooking classes, which are a big part of my current income, but you can, you know, find my info for private classes, my public classes, and most especially come subscribe for What to Cook When You Don't Feel Like Cooking, my newsletter, because it will give you lots of great ideas.
I love it. Well, thank you. And we will definitely include all those links in our show notes and on our podcast website, which is theexperientialtable.com. Now, if this conversation has sparked some new ideas or questions about building your own online cooking class business, then I want you to check out my free business cookbook. In it, I share my 6 essential steps to getting your online cooking class business off the ground. It covers the exact steps I teach in my signature program, Cooking Class Business School. So be sure to get your guide today. You can do that at hiddenrhythm.com/cookbook. And lastly, if you have some kind words to share about this episode, I mean, you know it was a good one, right? Caroline is amazing. Please do us a huge favor and subscribe, rate, and review where you are listening to this podcast. It really, really helps us get interviews into more ears of people like you. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next week, get excited to get experiential.